The meeting of Veterans Affairs Division will come to order. Let's take care of the minutes first. Representative Leader, would you care to move the minutes for the February 27th meeting?
I would, Mr. Chair, except I was excused, but that's fine. I looked at him.
Maybe we should have somebody move it who was here. Representative Detmer?
Sir, I do move.
Okay, yep. Representative Detmer moves the minutes of the February 27th meeting. Any discussion on the minutes? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Okay, Representative Tao, are you ready? Representative Tao's own committee is meeting, and he has a bill up in his own committee, so he has to get his bill heard first so he can get back to his own committee. So.
Thank you, members.
Representative Towles, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
I'll move your bill to get it before the committee.
Okay.
I'll move House File 1295 and that the bill be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. Okay, Representative Towles, present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe there's an amendment can I get a copy of it too? Thank you, members. Why don't we move on the amendment and then we will proceed with the testimony. What the amendment does is it limits the scope of the bill to just one program, the State Soldiers Assistance Program. And then the other piece we add in there is the for the commissioner to identify whether they were real or not, these veterans would need to provide an identification number. And many of them, when they were recruited by the U.S. Government, they were all given a veterans identification number. And we're having copies made of an example of it, and it should be here soon. And so I like us to move on the amendment just to get in the shape that I want, and then we can proceed with the testimony.
Okay, Representative Tao, I'll move your amendment. The amendment is to House File 1295, and it's the H-1295A1 amendment. Discussion to the amendment. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I had a discussion with Representative Junkie, I think, at the beginning of the session, and we were talking about this particular issue. And we got to the conclusion that, you know, a lot of these folks, they're in pretty tough situation right now, and pretty difficult time for them. And they, you know, they spent a lot of time before they were U.S. citizens. They spent a lot of time, and they risked just as much in helping the U.S. government during the Vietnam War back in Laos and Vietnam, and many of them do not get any benefit at all. But you know, Representative Junkie and I figure that if we recognize them a little bit and give them at least some basic benefits like I'll, you know, get them a pair of glasses or some heat support. Let's say they're low on their cash to for that month. Maybe even help them with their heating bill. These are some basic needs. And what I have with me is Charles Wu. He's in charge of the veterans, the Lao Hmong veterans group here. And then my father-in-law, Tiswa Vang, he's one of the first guy that they came and took him out of the village and trained him. So we'll start with Charles Wu and then Tiswa Vang will testify.
Okay, welcome to the committee and identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Charles Wu, former Arsenal Lieutenant Charles Wu. I serve in Special Guerrilla Unit FDU Military Region 2, VA-235, Image Battalion Artillery 2351, in Laos from 1968 to 1975. I was artillery from observed from 1969 to 1971. During the time of April 1972 to August 1972, I trained in an artillery at Denton Advisor Camp for 5 months. And then from November 1972 to March 1973, I went to train a chief company commander in Vientiane Military Region 5. After completing my training, I was assigned as a chief of a Kendo Artillery Station Region 2 from March 1973 to 1975 at the end. And I took part in the intelligence flight mission with U.S. Army. We worked together with a Colonel Guy, Colonel Ranger and Sergeant Canton in Longsheng headquarters. After I left my country to United States, I was awarded with the following recognition for my service. July 20, 1969, I received a Bronze Heroism Medal from Deputy Commander of the American Region in the state of Minnesota. November 7, 1999, I received the Vietnam Veteran Award from Windsor Hill Baptist Church in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma State. July 23, 2005, I received the Vietnam Veteran National Medal from Congress in the state of Colorado. July 22, 2006, I received a medal from Valor from the State of Minnesota Congress. July 22, 2007, I received the Commemorative Medal for Veterans of the Vietnam War Service from Congress in the State of Colorado. Now I'm the chair of the Lao Hmong American Coalition in Minnesota Chapter. Now we have a 300 active members for the Lao Hmong American Coalition in this chapter. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
And we'll put, Mr. Chair, members, if you indulge me, we'll proceed with my father-in-law, and he'll speak. He'll speak Hmong, and then I'll translate.
Okay, thank you. And yes, and if you can state and spell your name for the record, please.
His name is Thia Kuo Vang, C-H-I-A-K-O-U-A-V-A-N-G.
Cô nhà Thia Kuo Vang. Cô trong ý kiến cho cô trâu chậu. Cô tạo thả hạ. Thế nhà. Cho thả hạ nở hùa ADC. A-D-C. Cho thả hạ nở lũng bề hù hình ạ.
Name is Thia Kuo Vang. He started in 1960. He was part of the group called ADC.
He told us that he was 六七零度，也来到沙北的这么个鸟到台北，然后被叫做个台北人的龙北湖啊，哎，比如北木啊，然后去过啊，老久了。
He was sent to Thailand to train. There's 540 of them, and there became they're known as the SGU, a special guerrilla unit. They train from May to October. After their training, they were sent into Longcheng. They were hitting in Longcheng to get ready. There was an uprising and they took part in that. They were known as the first SGU unit. They were able to perform during the uprising. The other groups joined their group. That is all for now. He just want to add those that were trained and recruited by the U.S. They all have an identification card, and we passed out an example. And the top part, it's not the bottom one, it's the top part, is all of them have this card, or many of them lost, but many of them brought the card with them, so, or they memorized their number.
Okay, and you, is that it for your testimony? Not for
yeah.
Now. Okay, Representative Fowles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is: at the time that you were recruited or started fighting, joined the U.S., what promises were made by the U.S. military to you as far as what they were going to do for you, long term or short term, or anything? They work together. He has not asked them specifically, so he doesn't know whether their promise is made or not.
Representative Fowles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you currently get any benefits from the federal government, from the United States federal government? Is there anything there that they currently get?
No, nothing.
They haven't requested anything either.
Okay. Representative Fowles, follow up.
Are there other testifiers coming or not? Do you know?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
There might be.
Okay.
I'll ask the audience. I would assume there would be.
Okay. I'll ask this question. I'm not sure if you would be the one to know this or somebody else, but I'll ask anyway. After World War II, if people from England or France or any of our other allies moved to the United States, do they qualify for the same benefits as our veterans would in this country? Do you know that?
Mr. Chair, members, I don't know that.
Okay. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Powell. Are there any other states that have gone this route in recognizing this population of soldiers?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dettner, the U.S. Congress has put a plaque in I think in Arlington.
Mm-hmm.
That's as far as federal-wise. There was one memorial, I think several memorials built around the country to honor these guys, but just to get to this point, to actually get some benefit, no, Lee would be the first one.
Representative Dettner.
And as Chairman, Representative Howell, how many soldiers, Vietnam soldiers, are we talking about here in Minnesota?
Representative Howell.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dettner, I haven't done all the research. I know from Mr. Vu that he has 300 on his membership. Offhand, I know of four guys who have those the certificate or the military number. So it could be. I can't give you a ballpark.
And Mr. Richard, Chairman, and Mr. Tal, have you start working anything on a fiscal note for this bill?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dettner, I had a conversation with Representative Junkie this week, and we are in the process of getting that right now. So if this bill moves along and gets to that point, I think we'll get a good fiscal note out.
And Mr. Chairman, just one more question, Mr. Representative Tal, have you consulted with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs? Are they in supportive of this bill?
Representative Dettner and Mr. Chair, I've been working with them in the last couple of days, but I have not asked whether they support or not. So.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks. Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Tal, could you give us an idea about the time frame where the people here listed in your bill, when did they come to the United States approximately?
Representative Tal.
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus. The first group to arrive here, I believe, is 1975. And all of the majority of the ones who arrived early were the military leaders. I know of one gentleman who came last year. And so it's sporadic. But the majority of the Hmong you see here, they're here because either they participate in the war or their parents, someone has participated in the war. I remember when we were in the refugee camp, my dad had to go and take a test. And because it was hard to identify who was who, they were giving battle sites, pictures of battle sites, and pictures of American commanders. And if they couldn't identify who those pictures were, they didn't qualify to come to the U.S. And so under this bill, Mr. Vu and my father-in-law would be able to be eligible for the benefits. My father would not because he didn't have the military number. So.
Representative Magnus.
Well, thank you, Mr. Tal. And, you know, we as the traditional citizens here in the States probably work in our adult life, especially the veterans, you come back after military service and spend some years there and maybe work 40 years or 45, and the way our economy's going, maybe we'll work 80 years, I don't know. But we spend these years working and paying taxes and to support our programs here in the Minnesota programs and the national programs. And you know, some of the folks you're talking about here have been here for over 30 years, haven't they, Representative?
Yes. Yes.
And they've been paying taxes along with the rest of us into this program, too. So I think that's at least one point that registers in my mind, is they're supporting the program too, and now asking for a little bit of help. And we've narrowed it down to just one set of benefits. And I think that's helpful. I think that's a good start. And I don't know where we go from here, Cy. But at least it's a start. And I think, Mr. Chairman and members, the last paragraph here that requires at least some sort of identification is going to be key as you move forward. We're all struggling with the economic turmoil we're having now as a nation and a state, and you know, our budgets are bad, in bad shape, and we've got to, I think, as this moves forward, we'll have to find a way that we can definitely identify folks, and I certainly take Mr. Val and Mr. Vang at their word they were there helping, and came here and been good citizens. He could have picked a different son-in-law, probably, but that's luck of the draw Mr. Vang has. I know when I served in Vietnam, there were people there, indigenous people, the mountain yards, that we were the only family they had.
Should we come back to you, Representative Magnus? Okay, let's move on. Anything else, members? Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tao, I spoke with you yesterday, and one of the issues for me is over the years, the United States has been involved in a lot of conflict, and they've had a lot of support from people. And some I remember particularly were the Turks during the time that we were in the Korean War. In the Vietnam War, we had not only support from the Vietnamese army, but the Laotian, both groups. We had the Hmong, and then we had the Royal Lao, who were helping us as well. But there, I remember we served with Australians. We served with Thai. The Royal Thai Army was there. And since then, in Bosnia and some of the other conflicts, in Iraq, Afghanistan, we have multinational forces. I understand that this is a little bit different because you're coming as refugees. And most of the other support we've had has been from countries where their governments have sent troops. But I also served in the Middle East for some time, and we worked with the Kurds, who essentially have no country. They too served us. And I'm just afraid that if we take one group and offer them services, even as small as what you're asking for, we're opening the door to all the other groups. And it's not that I think that you should be denied what you're asking for. I question whether this is the right committee to come to. And that's essentially what I was saying yesterday. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, these guys were, I think the difference between some of the examples you gave, I think besides the Kurds, is they were actively recruited by the U.S. government to really be the American foot soldier in Laos. And that's why we didn't have, that's why there weren't that many American foot soldiers in Laos, other than the advisors and the trainers. And they were actively recruited, and we were all hoping that it went well. But it didn't go well, and that's why they're here. They have no home, no other place to go. So.
Okay. Hey, actually, members, we're still on the amendment. The discussion is getting a little broader than that. Maybe Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And could we hear from the from the Veterans Affairs.
Yes.
Division.
Representative Faust.
Thank you.
Oh.
I think we voted on the amendment.
Did we vote on it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did we? Oh, I'm sorry. We did vote on it. Okay, good. Thank you. Representative Tao, are your testifiers finished? I think we'll go to other testifiers. Maybe the department wants to come up first, and then we'll go to others. And I should remind everybody, we do have six other bills on the agenda yet today, so straight to the point on your testimony for those of you who want to testify. All right.
Welcome to the chair, members. Mike Puglisi, Deputy Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I first want to say that, you know, no one here is certainly questioning the service and sacrifice that was made. We all honor and appreciate those sacrifices that were made. I have a hard time accepting the fact that the Department of Veterans Affairs, whose mission is to provide services and benefits and care for U.S. veterans, which requires a lot of verification with their discharges, honorable discharge, to open up that door. As a representative said, I think it's setting quite a precedent, and I don't know where that door gets closed then. I have another issue with verification. How would we verify? We go through a lot of trouble to make sure that the benefits we're providing are going to honorably discharged veterans. And there's fraud even in that. We get some fraudulent DD-214s, but we know what to look for with those. Whatever evidence or records were provided, I don't know how we could verify that they're legit, that proves that they, actually were doing what they say they were doing. Not that we want to question them, but we need to verify these taxpayer dollars. We're trying to be as fiscally responsible as possible. And I don't know how we could do that with this bill being asked what we're trying to do. I know that a lot of veterans, have issue with this, and it's not, as I said earlier, questioning service and sacrifice. But our charter is to make sure that we care for our American veterans. And opening that door, I think, is a slippery slope. I firmly believe that this is a federal issue. Other groups have been elevated to veteran status over the years who have contributed and served and sacrificed. And Congress is the one that declares whether or not they should be elevated to veteran status. Once that's done, then all states follow suit. Once they become veterans, then they're entitled to all veteran benefits. Another issue I have with the bill is we don't have any idea about the fiscal implications. We don't know how many numbers we're talking. We're talking about a state code assistance program which was developed to fill the gaps of the federal benefits. These are for people that are experiencing a period of temporary disability, unable to work, and this keeps them in their homes, food on the table, clothing on their backs, to get them through those hard times until they can get back to work or until they get on the federal benefit system. We don't have a lot of money, and the past 2 years we've had to come back and ask for more because we're running out of money before the end of the fiscal year. So we really don't know how this would impact our funding, but it could be quite detrimental. So I'll just ask the committee to be very mindful of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs mission and just also consider maybe a resolution to Congress asking that they consider this issue. I truly believe that's where this issue belongs, is at the federal level. And if they feel that it's appropriate to elevate them to veteran status as they have done with many other groups in the past, that would be the appropriate vehicle. And then all other states would have to follow suit. We go by the federal definition of a veteran. And this just really opens up that door. And where does it stop? So with that, I would take any questions you might have.
All right. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we currently have veterans in Minnesota that are eligible for Minnesota veterans that are not, or veterans benefits that are not getting them because we are not providing enough money for them?
At this time, Mr. Chair, Representative Faust, I would say no. We have not run out of money thus far. The way this program works, the State Social Assistance Program, it's on an ongoing basis. So we have people come to us on throughout the year that need assistance. So we try to keep the funds flush throughout the year. We try to project ahead to see if we're going to run out of money. And the director of the program has told me that we're getting close to where we might not have enough to get through this year, where some people would be denied. If we open up the door and allow this new group in, that's quite possible that we would run out that much quicker. But to this date, we haven't turned people away.
Okay, Representative Pollack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Second question, I asked this earlier. The World War II veterans from England or France or wherever that fought with us in those wars, if they move to this country, are they eligible for the same benefits as the Americans who fought in the war?
Mr. Chair, Representative Staff, no, they would not be.
They're not. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And testify, do we have any Minnesota veterans that maybe don't have the paperwork or the verification of their service that are not receiving benefits right now?
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, you know, there are troubles at times when veterans come forward for the benefits. They didn't keep their 214 for whatever reason. They got misplaced. We have ways to go and track down their 214s, either through the federal government. A lot of times we have a repository of their 214s. We can track it down. We can verify service either through DOD or the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. There's a lot of mechanisms to double-check and make sure this is legit. When we get a 214 that looks a little fishy, we have ways to go ahead and get the original to make sure that there's honorable service. And that's another key. It has to be honorable service to get our benefit.
Representative Detmer.
And Mr. Chair, and I guess I kind of agree with your statement a minute ago regarding a federal and a resolution, something that this is a federal, I believe it's a federal situation that we need to be looking at here. And Mr. Chair, is this something that that this committee would put together a resolution, or would it be something that would come from the Veterans Affairs, put something together that would be sent forward?
Mr. Chair, members, you know, we would certainly work with the committee on developing that resolution, but it should come from the committee.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, good. And I think we'll maybe Representative Powell wants to comment on that too.
Chair, would you like to get some more questions? Or?
Anybody else have questions before we go to Representative Powell? Okay, thank you. Representative Powell.
Thank you. Thank you, members and Mr. Chair. I understand. You know, clearly in the bill, you put in provision where the commissioner could help make sure that what they present is legit. And I could tell you a little story. My father-in-law was able to get his number and verify his number. Right now, I'm trying to work through that system right now. I don't know whether it's in the CIA's archive or the State Department's archive, but we're going to go through that system and link that system with the verification process as we move forward. And in regards to whether we have money or not, you know, I would encourage the members to send this to Representative Otremba's committee, and then from there bring it to Representative Junkie's committee so we could really find out how many veterans are out there and how much it's going to cost. And when we get there, there's no money. I think I'll be okay with it. I understand the situation with the state is in.
Anything further? Representative Tao, what do you think about the idea of a resolution to the U.S. Congress?
I think that'll be a great idea along with this, traveling along with this piece.
Okay. Representative Magnus, did you want to have more to say? Or?
I think we're kind of stuck here because we have to find a way to verify, certainly have to find a way to verify the applicants for anything. And Mr. Chairman, I don't know how we can move ahead with that without something from the federal government that, you know, at least has some documentation somewhere about where we go, because I don't know how the department could do a fiscal note without some sort of a standard from the federals, and then you'd have a uniform standard across the whole U.S. and move forward.
Mr. Chairman, members, you know, I spent all afternoon calling out to Washington, D.C., the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, Department of Defense, friends that I have across the nation in similar positions, trying to track down where these numbers would come from, where this data would come from, where this verification would come. Nobody knew. So we can, you know, certainly spend some more time trying to track it down, but when I talked to some high-level people in these offices, they were dumbfounded. They said, well, we really don't have a clue what you're talking about. So I don't know what does exist. I'm not questioning whether or not something does exist. I just don't know whether or not we're going to be able to track it down, and it doesn't appear that it's coming from a government entity. And if it's not coming from a government entity, I don't know how we can accept it. And as I said, it just makes it that much harder for us to try to decide whether or not someone is eligible or not. I mean, that's a real problem. We're not opposing whether or not they are deserving of benefits and services, not at all. It's just a matter of how we go about ensuring that they are deserving of it. I don't know what mechanism exists that we could do. And that's why I think at the federal level it makes most sense. They could elevate them to the veteran status, then they give them the proof. Then they would have the proof to present so that they could get benefits.
Okay. Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Has any group or organization tried to do that on the federal level? It seems to me that, you know, I heard about this in the news at one point in time that somebody was trying to do that. Has that happened, or what is that process? What has happened in that process?
Mr. Chair, Representative Faust, you know, that has happened in the past. I believe it was the Public Law 95-202 elevated many groups to veteran status, a couple of decades ago. So it is possible. I'm sure it's not easy, but it is possible, and I just think that's the appropriate vehicle. And the federal benefits are such a better package than what the state offers. As I said earlier, the state benefits are really to fill those gaps that are left by the federal benefits. Period of temporary disability, those types of things. The federal benefits are very comprehensive and a much better benefit package. I mean, I think that would be a much better way to go than dipping into the state social assistance program, which, as I said, is just really there to fill the gaps and provide temporary assistance.
Okay. Representative Denver.
Mr. Chair, and I guess it would be my recommendation that we, you know, not take any action on this bill until we get something through the federal government and what direction we should go.
Okay. Representative Otramba.
I don't even know how to say it, but when people go to war for us, and I know my husband was a Vietnam vet and he died because of his injuries, it feels like they do with some of the veterans that are having problems. And these are guys that worked right next to me. And they had their cards. And it feels really awkward for us to not help them, even for any little thing. I mean, they fought as hard as anybody else.
Madam Chair, members, I don't think anybody's questioning their honor or their service and their sacrifices. I just think it's a question of how we can appropriately administer benefits to them and making sure that we're doing it in an appropriate manner. Making sure that we're verifying it, that it's legit.
Representative Dapper.
Yeah, and again, Mr. Chair, I don't question their service at all. Just that we need to, you know, we require our veterans to have verification of their service and everything. We shouldn't be treating any other population other than the way we treat our own veterans. I don't question their service.
Representative Fowler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I promise this will be the last time I talk. I really have mixed feelings on this bill. I have some concerns. First of all, I mean, most importantly, there's no fiscal note at this point in time, and so that is a very big concern. I'm also concerned about the positive proof of identification that they actually fought in the wars. And this is certainly a bad year to add more benefits to anybody, you know, just because of what we're facing with the deficit, and I think everybody knows and can understand that. But on the other hand, these are legal immigrants that came here legally. We're not talking about anyone that's not here legally. Most of them moved here, I believe, in the early 80s and paid taxes since then, as Representative Magnus said, and so, you know, they've been very productive citizens of the United States since that point in time, and I assume mostly in the state of Minnesota are the ones that we're looking at. Way back in the early 80s, I had a group of mostly Vietnamese, some Laotians work for me, and visit with them about the war and their feelings on the war. And I think just about every one of them would have gone back the next day if they could have to continue fighting. And so there was certainly a very strong dedication there and a very strong sense of wanting to fight for their home country. These people fought and died, and their families died, and they lost their homes, and they even lost their country. And so I certainly would like to do something. I agree with Representative Otremba. But right now, I'm without a fiscal note, what do we do? And so I'm wondering if Representative Tao would be willing to wait until we have that to move this forward.
Well, members, I want to remind everyone that this is a policy committee, and we're discussing the validity of this policy. And when it gets to the fiscal policy, fiscal committee, and if there's no money, I'm okay with the understanding that we do not have money in the state. In regards to the verification, if we wait for the feds to do anything, I don't think we're going to get anything done. As you know, the commissioner already checked with the state, all sorts of State Department, and I don't think they have the answer as well. And so I am stuck as well. And if they had the answer, I think we would have got it by now. And so even if they passed a veterans bill, they would struggle with the same question as well. I don't think we should wait for them to give us any direction. I think in Minnesota we're smart enough to lead the Fed.
Okay, anything further? Same members, we still have 6 bills left on the agenda, and we're 50 minutes into the meeting. What I'm going to do is pull my own bill off the agenda, so those from the university, and if there were others here that were going to testify on my bill, I apologize, but I'm going to pull mine off the agenda. And from this point forward, if any of the authors have testifiers that drove in from a distance, we'll take yours next, so let me know as we continue here. And with our time issue in mind, I'm going to ask for if there's any people in the audience that would like to testify, but to keep testimony as short as you can and to the point as much as possible. Thank you, and welcome to the committee, and identify yourself.
Chairman, members, my name is John Cox. I'm the legislative representative for the American Legion in Minnesota, which is 170,000 folks strong. The American Legion is a congressionally chartered veteran service organization. The definition of a veteran is determined for our membership and for eligibility for VA and other benefits by the Congress. Laotian and Vietnamese freedom fighters during the course of the Vietnam War were a gallant and staunch ally of the U.S. effort. We respect their bravery, their steadfast devotion to their nations and to freedom, and their courage through the long process. The American Legion, however, cannot support a bill that places veteran status on foreign nationals, unless the Congress has already debated and decided the issue. While we are talking about state benefits, the definition of veteran must continue to be a federal decision. The American Legion is also concerned about the lack of any verification process for such veterans. Again, we have nothing but the highest regard and respect for Laotian and Vietnamese soldiers and the sacrifices they made for their nation. Thank you. Any questions?
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Powell, most of these individuals are American citizens, right now, aren't they? Citizens or not?
I believe almost all of them, if there is not maybe one or two of them, are not. The two guys that I know who just came last year are not. So.
Okay. Anything further, members?
Thank you,
Mr. Cox. Anybody else? Here. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm a two-tour combat veteran from Vietnam. I volunteered twice, and the Veterans Administration has declared me certified as half crazy for doing that, and but I'm proud of that. And we, in the veterans community, want to have nothing but adulation and appreciation for our Asian compatriots. I was a helicopter crew chief on those two tours, and we carried them in and we carried them back out, and they were always diligent and trying to do their best job. The problem is that we have a lot of veterans, Asian veterans, who are would be qualifying for this if this goes through. It's just not the Hmong, it's just not the Vietnamese, it's not the Royal Lao, it's the Koreans. We even have Cambodians that would be doing this. I believe that the best way to do this is to have the federal government declare this. Now, this is what happened with the Filipinos. They had to be under the command of an American officer, and he had a list of who was on that program in the Philippines and other areas during World War II. Those who were not, the guerrilla forces in the Philippines who are not under American command, did not qualify for the federal benefits that they have recently got. And I believe this would be the same for these gentlemen and these the women also. So I believe that this is what needs to be done. I believe that the commissioner is right in that, and again, I thank them for what they did. I was there for two tours. They're there for life. And they had to go. They had to leave. Thank you for your time, and that's all I have to say.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Kaiser? All right, thank you. While they're coming to the tables, I should let everyone know that I had testifiers for my bill who can't be here next week, so mine is back on the agenda. I also found out that we have the room for as long as we need, so I need to apologize to everyone, but it looks like we're going to go over time. But so. All right. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Members of the committee, my name is Al Lair. I'm a former commissioner of Veterans Affairs and a past state commander of the Veterans of Foreign Wars. I am here as the legislative appointed chairman with our state commander, Stan Kowalski, in Minneapolis. And Commander Kowalski will make the official statement. I thank you for your consideration.
Members of the committee, my name is Stan Kowalski. I'm the state commander of the Veterans of Foreign Wars. I'm a World War II vet. Does that make me eligible to get veterans benefits in England or France? Or if Japan was on our side at the time, could I get benefits from Japan? No, you cannot. Because you fought for your country, and I'm talking about the Vietnamese, the Hmong, the Laotian. I honor that. But we were over there helping them. They weren't technically helping us. We were trying to obtain their freedom for them. And we've got veterans out on the street today that are not getting enough help because of the shortage of funds, and yet we want to take in more people, and I understand that. And I'm willing to help them any way I can. But I'm not eligible for any preference in France or Germany, and they talk about the plaques they got. I'll take you to my house. I got a room full of plaques from all over the world and trophies and commendations from things I've helped for these different nations that I've been to, and I've been to most of the countries in this world. I'm not asking for any type of thing different. I did it because I wanted to. They did it because they were defending their country. And I can appreciate that, and I honor them for it. But we were not there fighting an American war. We were fighting a war for the Laotians and the Nam people. To say that they deserve the right to be called a United States veteran, I can't buy that. I'm sorry. I totally disagree with the way this thing is being presented. To give them the same benefits of the 18 million that were in World War II, I can't buy that. Again, we were in a war helping the Vietnamese, the Koreans, the Bosnians. We were not there actually defending America. We are defending the principles of America, but we were there trying to get their freedom for them. So to give them status, the same thing as the American vets that stepped forward and volunteered for our country, I cannot buy that under any conditions, and everybody knows I'm out there trying to help any veteran that I see. And I'm more than willing to help the Hmong people and the Hmong veterans in any way, shape I can. But when you try to put them up with us as an American veteran, I can't buy that. You're actually disregarding the 3 million men that I know that have died in the service of our country. When you stop and figure out how many of Americans died in Vietnam and Korea for their freedom, not for ours, but for theirs, I think we're going along a totally different trail here. They want to get help, fine, but don't ask me to recognize them in the same status that I recognize Americans that have died for our country volunteering. I just can't buy that, Commissioner, and that's my feeling.
Okay, any comments, members, or questions? Okay, thank you, both of you. Anyone further from the audience? Okay, Representative Tao.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I understand and I respect all the opinions of all the testifiers for and against this proposal. I leave my proposal at the will of the committee.
Okay, Representative Tao, I think I'm going to lay the bill over right now. I would also ask that you work with the department on a resolution to U.S. Congress to deal with the issue of Hmong people who did work with our soldiers side by side. But I will lay the bill over. I'm going to ask you, however, to keep working with Representative Junkie on trying to get the actual information on the number of veterans and what it's going to cost, that type of thing. That would be good information that we will more than likely need as we move along on this. And I would like to work with you in the next week or so on this, too, and see what can be done with it. But for today, I think we'll lay the bill over.
Thank you, Member.
All right. Thank you, Representative Allen. Okay, next bill is Representative Overmuller. And also, Representative Gartner has graciously offered to wait with his bill till next week, so we'll be taking that one off the agenda for today.
Would you mind passing that around?
All right. Welcome to the committee, Representative Obermuller. Representative Newton, would you like to move this bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I move the bill. Representative Newton moves House File 433, is it? Yes, House File 433, and recommend that it be passed and referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, and
I've spoken with, I'm passing around some donuts as is the custom, I understand, when I make my first visit to your committee with my bill here. And so please, I know it's Friday during Lent for us Catholic boys. I want my mom to know when she listens to the tape that I didn't partake in the donuts today, but I'd like everyone else to enjoy those.
Thank you, Representative Overmeer.
I did talk with Representative Sanders. We have a slight oral amendment to change the effective date of the bill, given that what we're trying to do here with this bill is establish a Minnesota Medal of Honor Day for March 25th. The original intent was to have it in place by the 25th of this year. We're not sure we're going to make that deadline, although we're still going to try. But we'd like to change it, and I would ask if Representative Sanders would make that oral amendment. I'd appreciate it.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do have an oral amendment on this. Line 1.10, after the word effective, we would strike the date of March 25th, 2009, and add the language, the day following final enactment. So the line 1.10 should read effective date. This section is effective the day following final enactment.
Okay, any discussion to the oral amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll, given the time frames that we have here, I want to pass it on to right away to David Hammer, who's a constituent of mine down in Eagan, who brought this, I think, fabulous idea to align Minnesota's law with a national day of honor for Medal of Honor winners. And I'll let Mr. Hammer, if that's okay with the chair, make a few comments.
All right, thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hammer, and identify yourself for the record.
My name is David Hammer. Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for allowing me to testify on the creation of the Minnesota Medal of Honor Day. I'm a veteran of the U.S. Army and a retiree of the U.S. Air Force Reserve. The Medal of Honor is the highest award of valor and action against an enemy force, which can be bestowed upon an individual serving in the United States Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, and Coast Guard. To receive this rare honor, the President of the United States must approve it after a long and rigorous consideration process, and then the President presents it personally to the recipient in the name of Congress. Since the birth of our nation, over 40 million Americans have faced combat, yet only 3,448 have received our nation's highest honor for combat. Of those 3,448, only 55 are credited in Minnesota. Currently, there are 98 living Medal of Honor recipients, and only two from Minnesota. The first is Mike Colaleo, U.S. Army from Hibbing, who earned his medal in World War II and resides in Duluth. The second is Leo Thorsness, U.S. Air Force from Walnut Grove, who earned his medal during Vietnam and now resides out of state. The list of Medal of Honor recipients includes the Rare Peacetime Award to Charles A. Lindbergh, Army Air Corps, for his flight across the Atlantic. And the list of Minnesotans also includes the person in Fleming Field in South St. Paul is named for, Richard Fleming, U.S. Marines, World War II. President Abraham Lincoln created the Medal of Honor and first presented on March 25th, 1863. On 2007, the U.S. House and Congress unanimously passed the first National Medal of Honor Day. For the National Medal of Honor Day, why do we need a Minnesota Medal of Honor Day? I feel the young of today need heroes. We've all seen the sports stars and celebrities that our young look up to become questionable role models in these recent years. Recognizing our Medal of Honor recipients as heroes shows that these individuals have sacrificed others over themselves, and that is important. It is the ideals of courage, sacrifice, integrity, patriotism, commitment, and citizenship that surround the Medal of Honor. I'd like to read one citation out of all the Minnesota residents. This one's from Richard Sorensen from Anoka, who served in the U.S. Marines during World War II. The citation reads, "For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty while serving with an assault battalion attached to the 4th Marine Division on 1-2 February 1944. Putting up a brave defense against a particularly violent counterattack by the enemy during invasion operations, Private Sorensen and 5 other Marines that occupied a shell hole were endangered by Japanese grenades thrown in their midst. Unhesitantly and with complete disregard for his own safety, Private Sorensen hurled himself upon the deadly weapon, heroically taking the full impact of his explosion. As a result of this gallant action, he was severely wounded, but the lives of the comrades were saved. His great personal valor and exceptional spirit of self-sacrifice in the face of almost certain death were in keeping with the highest traditions of the U.S. Naval Service. That ends the citation. While I served in the military, I wasn't ever in a combat situation. I don't have a clue what would prompt someone to make a decision to risk certain death by covering a grenade with his body. I do understand the value of my military experience, but I don't know how a person comes to that conclusion. On March 25th of this year, the Minnesota Commander's Task Force will dedicate a plaque to the Minnesota Medal of Honor recipient. The plaque is paid for by the Commander's Task Force. It will be located in the Court of Honor and the Capitol Mall. That is located surrounding the World War II Memorial in front of the Veterans Services Building. The Minnesota Commander's Task Force consists of the American ex-POW, American Legion, and vets, disabled American veterans, Jewish War veterans, Marine Corps League, Military Order of the Purple Heart, Veterans of Foreign Wars, and Vietnam Veterans of America. At a time when we face many uncertainties in the world, honoring our Medal of Honor recipients and showing our Minnesota youth that the values surrounding the Medal of Honor will be positive. If it makes one young person read about the ideals and values surrounding the Minnesota Medal of Honor Day, it will be good. Additionally, we must honor our deceased Medal of Honor recipient, and we must do it now before all the living Minnesota Medal of Honor recipients have passed away. Please pass the bill.
All right, thank you. Questions, comments, members? All right, Representative Obermueller, do you have more testifiers or...
No, Mr. Chair, but I would just a final comment, if I may, there. When we talk about the men and women who are serving our country, they're all showing bravery and self-sacrifice by doing that. The people who are awarded this honor, many of them are awarded it posthumously, get this honor because they're showing such conspicuous above and beyond effort that they're given this award. It's a very important thing, and I'd love to have this honored in Minnesota.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to ask if there's anybody from the audience that would like to speak for or against the bill. Okay, Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative, is there any cost involved here, any fiscal note at all?
Mr. Chair, Representative, this would just, the only cost would be the paperwork actually of the governor signing his proclamation, okay. But no other effect on the budget.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay, if there's nobody else that would like to speak on the bill, Representative Newton renews his motion that House File 433, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Agriculture. Before I finish that, Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair, I just think that could be consent calendar, because if they want to get it by the 25th, we put on consent calendar, and we'll move pretty quickly.
Representative Leader, we're a division, so it has to go to the next committee. But from there, probably that's a possibility. But okay, thank you, Representative Leader. If there's nothing further, I'll renew the motion. The House File 433, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Representative Oldman. All right, next on the agenda, Representative Eastland, House File 1127. All right, welcome to the committee, Representative Eastland. I'll move your bill to get it before the committee. I'll move House File 1127 and that it be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. In your packet, I just want to refer you to, there's a letter from a Lieutenant Colonel Travis L. Voice. He is the person that brought this issue to me and would have liked to have been here to testify today, but was unable to, so he sent the letter instead. And what you're looking at, or getting that out, it is brought to my attention by people who know more about language that's appropriate than I, that we could do a technical amendment to this section of law, and I think Representative Detmer has kind of got that, which if we could do that at this point, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, Representative Detmer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, when you look at terms, acronyms and terms in the military, we have to kind of be careful sometimes with different words we make, and what makes sense to maybe one group might not make sense to another group, and If we take a look, if you have your bill in front of you, committee members, on line 1, or I should say 111, you see the word basic, active duty military salary. You're going to cross out basic and put in base, B-A-S-E. We, in the military, use the term base pay. On line 14, you find the word basic, active duty military salary. Again, cross out basic and put in the word base. Line 21, towards the end of the line there, you have basic active, cross out basic and put in base. Then on line 2-1, the first word on that line should be base rate. So just add the word base. Then you follow along on that line. And it says dividing the members military monthly. Between members and military, add base military monthly salary. So between members and military, add base. On line 7, it says daily rates. Between daily and rates, add base. On line 9, it says daily rate towards the end. Between daily and rate, add the word base. And those are the oral amendments.
All right, thank you. Discussion to the oral amendments. Everybody, Mr. Chair, this has really no effect on what I'm doing in the bill. It's just kind of a technical change that was brought to my attention. We can, I would take it as a friendly amendment. Any further discussion to the oral amendment? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Go ahead, Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This provision of law has to do with the military pay differential, and I'm sure everybody in here is aware of that. You know, when someone gets in the reserves or that is not active in military service, gets called up to active military service, if they work for a public employee, basically what this law requires is that the public employee pay a differential in pay if their military pay is less than they would have been making in their civilian public service job. When we work with jobs that are 12-month a year jobs, it all works quite well, but there's some issues that happen when we work with schools or in particular, well, in particular this is for schools because they work on a 9-month school year, and so it makes some of the provisions of this law confusing. And so there's one issue that I'd like to correct and that was brought to my attention, and it has to do with if I can explain it intuitively here so you can understand it. It has to do with the fact that school districts only work on a 9-month calendar. And so they earn their pay over a 9-month period of time. And so when a soldier is called up for active duty, for every day that they miss during that school year, they are missing their opportunity to earn their pay. But if they are gone during the summer months, they actually don't make any income, so there is no pay differential that would even apply. And so in trying to address that in the law, what we have done is we've gone to what we call a daily rate of pay. And so we're comparing the salaries on a daily rate of pay. And that's currently in the law. And if I just want to maybe point you to line 124. And it states in there, the pay differential must be based on a comparison between the members' daily rate of active duty pay calculated by dividing the members' military monthly salary by the number of paid days in the month. So it's very clear in the law that what we're talking about is a comparison on the daily rates of pay. And then later on, if you go down to line 2.7 or 2.6 in the middle there, the differential payment under this paragraph must be the difference between the daily rates of military pay times the number of school district contract days. And so you would only get the differential for the number of days that you actually would have taught. It's already built into the law that we're trying to use the daily rate of pay as the comparison, and that the differential would only count for the number of days that they would have been teaching school. So if the difference in pay, for example, was they would have made $200 as a teacher and they're making $100 in the service, they would get $100 of differential for every day that they would have been teaching. And it would only cover the days they would have been teaching. So that's the way the law was intended, and that's the way it's written. The problem with the current statute is in the next lines there, 2.8 and 2.9, 2.10. What it says there, if we read through it, it says, this payment must be made only to a person whose basic active duty military salary is less than the salary the person would be paid, is the way the current law reads. And so the confusion that's being addressed, or that is of concern, is that when they talk about basic active duty military salary, all of a sudden we're switching the potential interpretation, and so we're kind of shifting. And some are saying, well, we could interpret that to say, well, that's their annual salary, their basic active duty military salary, the stricken language there. And so what I'm trying to do in the bill is simply make it consistent, so all the way through the language of the bill it's clear that we're talking about the daily rate of active duty pay and the daily rate of pay that they would have been paid on their job, on their civilian job. And it's just to clarify something that I'm not aware that it's been an issue for any number to speak of. I think this is the only person that has brought the issue to my attention, and I was the original author of this language back in 1990 or something like 2001, I think. I wasn't here in 1990. 2001. The intent is that we are looking at the daily rate, and so just to take out that confusion, so it's no longer an issue, we're just suggesting the change to the language in the statute.
Okay. Representative Detmer and then Representative Newton.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Eastland, for Representative Eastland, for bringing this forward, because districts need to have it, they're clarified, exactly how they need to interpret the statute, and if this was some problems for certain districts, I think this will clarify it. And we're not, we're not talking a lot of different people in this situation, but it does affect people. So. Thank you for bringing this forward.
Okay, thank you. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Eastman. If we stick with base pay, we're not including things like housing allowance or any proficiency pay or any of the other pay that an individual would get while on active duty. And I actually question that, whether it shouldn't be their total pay package as compared to the total pay for the school district. So I'm a little hesitant on this as to whether we should just include the base pay or any one of the allowances that the service member would be entitled to.
Mr. Chair, I think that's an issue. I think that goes beyond the scope of what we're talking about here, because that's inherent in the entire bill, is that what we're defining here is base pay. That's what the whole military pay differential is based on, is their base pay, not the extra things that they get. Because, and part of the philosophy of that is, as I recall, is that because someone is called up to the military, doesn't mean that they are relieved of all those expenses at home. They still have a house payment that they're probably making, if their family is making at home. They're still buying insurance for their family. They're still going through all of the expenses that they would have as a civilian at home. And so because they're reimbursed for that, that should not count against their military pay differential in the military, because they're already paying for that at home.
to that point, Representative Detmer.
And Mr. Chairman, and just to that point, Representative Newton, is when I was over in Kuwait, we had some soldiers over there that were, you know, making 50,000-60,000 as educators that had been teaching for several years, and all of them they're specialists in the military, and there's a big difference in pay there. So it was really tough for their families without language like this. So we're really helping out those soldiers that are in that situation.
Okay, Representative Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I basically had the same comments as Representative Eastland had, is that they still are incurring those expenses, so I really don't need to add it.
Okay, thank you. Anything further, member? All right, anybody from the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Okay. Then I'm going to renew my motion that House File 1127, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, we're going to move away from the agenda a little bit. Representative Kalin needs to go, so we'll take his bill next.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the bill.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you. Representative Magnus moves House File 1400 and that it be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. And thank you, Representative Magnus and Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have just a correction on the longest bill I've carried here in the legislature, and we need an amendment to take care of the technical piece on Article 6, Section 17 of it. So it's the 121 amendment, so that the bill will actually read, Honoring All Vietnam Era Veterans Day, and then June 13, 2009 is Honoring All Vietnam Era Veterans Day in Minnesota, is how the bill will read. If we could move the amendment and put it on, and we can present the bill.
Okay, Representative Magnus moves the A09-0121 amendment. Discussion to the amendment. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I want to thank Representative Magnus for his help with the bill, and I know that many members of this committee are also on this bill. Recently, we honored the World War II veterans of the state with a phenomenal ceremony and dedication of the World War II memorial. I think it's time that we, in light of the discussion, I think that this committee heard this morning, you know, that attitude about our Vietnam era veterans, unfortunately, the discussion and tension during the conflict prevented us from adequately honoring that era of a veteran and for their service. And they are organizing a fantastic party on June 13th of this year to honor all Vietnam era veterans. My father served as a Marine during the Cuban Missile Crisis and was honorably discharged in April of 64. A few months later, his unit was sent over to Vietnam and had a very high casualty rate in the high 90s. So I feel a special personal gratitude to our veterans who have served, some of whom are on this committee, and I think it's time that we make sure that we formally honor them. I do want to point out, members, that the organizational meeting that I attended, one of the questions was, well, we were able to allocate funds for the World War II Memorial Party. How come we can't do it this year? And I told them, I think quite honestly and regretfully, that given our budget situation, we're going to ask them to do what they, what our veterans have done all the time, and that is step forward and serve and find a way to make ends meet during tough times. But I think it's going to be an exciting party, and with me today
are two members of the Military Order of the Purple Hearts who served in Vietnam, Mr. Richard Jenkins and Mr. Bob Connor.
Okay, thank you, and welcome to the committee, and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Richard Jenkins, Sr., Department Commander for Military Order of Purple Heart. Represented all the combat wounded veterans of Minnesota, and I'll let Mr. Bob Connors introduce himself, but this is a heart of mine. As an RD minister, the Holy Spirit put upon my heart 2 years ago, now is the time to honor our veterans. We have many veterans who live in northern Minnesota, who live in bunkers, who have not filed for disability, who have been eschewed from society, rejection, abandonment. And this is the time to bring healing and restoration. And so I believe that this is going to be a worthwhile celebration. It's going to bring a lot of healing. It's going to bring restoration. It's going to bring completeness. We love this country. We love this state. And I believe that Minnesotans will come out and celebrate what the sacrifices that the Vietnam veterans have rendered. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Robert Connor. I'm the Department Adjutant for the Military Order of the Purple Heart and also a Vietnam veteran. As our commander said, this will be a ceremony with some solemnity, but it will also be a ceremony with some joy and celebration. We do have the replica of the Vietnam Wall as one of the items, but we also have a Bob Hope impersonator from the old Bob Hope shows that he did in Vietnam. So, like I say, it'll be a worthwhile day for all, and includes not just the veterans of that era, but we welcome their families as well.
Okay, thank you. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Kalin, for bringing this forward. I think it was last session that we adopted Vietnam War Day in Minnesota, and also Korean War Day in Minnesota, and I was honored to be able to co-authors of those two bills, and Representative Howell brought forward the Vietnam War Day in Minnesota, and there was a lady from Forest Lake, my hometown, that brought that forward, and we had a celebration in Forest Lake, and one of the things that we did, and I spoke at the event, was to have all the Vietnam War veterans stand up, and whoever was standing next to them was to turn around and give them a hug and welcome them home. That wasn't done. That wasn't done back in the 70s. So I think this will be a great opportunity to recognize our Vietnam War veterans. Thank you.
Okay. Anything further, members?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Kay.
Mr. Chair and members, just as we had a role as legislators in reading the honor roll at the World War II Memorial, the previous celebration, there will be a role for us to play as well. The Secretary of State's office is collating those names, and hope that this committee will be the first to volunteer to be there and to be able to honor those who have fallen in service to this country during the conflict. So one of the things that I hope that you will help us do, Mr. Chair, is raise the visibility of this event to make sure that all Minnesotans know about this, the need to give these guys the thanks that they deserve. So.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I would like to finally conclude as that we will have a gold star mothers, those who lost their sons, daughters in battle. In battle, we have a little over 1,000 men killed in action from the state of Minnesota. Most of their parents are in the 70s and 80s. The average age of the Vietnam veteran is 64 years old. We will have the blue star mothers, who currently have sons in Iraq and Afghanistan. They will be a part of this celebration. So it's really good that we can come together and unite in honoring all veterans who have paid the ultimate price and those who are still recovering from wounds sustained in battle. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions for these gentlemen? All right, thank you, Mr. Jenkins and Mr. Connors. Anybody from the audience who wishes to testify for or against? No? Okay, I'll renew my motion. No, excuse me. Representative Magnus.
Mr. Chairman, I'll renew my motion. The House File 1400 be
passed on as
amended.
As amended, excuse me. Right. Be passed on to Representative Wilkremic's committee, right? So to go to that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yep. Agriculture, rural economies, and veterans affairs. Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to take up my bill next. Representative Newton will chair the committee.
Welcome, Mr. Chair and Representative Tunin. Would you like to move this bill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'll move House File 1281 and that it be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs.
And Representative Tunin, I understand there's an amendment to the bill?
Yes. The amendment, what it will do actually is delete Section 1. So it takes the cost out of the bill is what it does. There's some where some financial would have required some financial strain, you might say, on Minsky and the University of Minnesota. But it takes all of the money issues out of the bill. And I don't know if I have a copy of the amendment. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the H-1281A1 amendment.
Right. Representative Tunin moved the H-121A amendment. Is there any discussion? Any comments? All in favor of approving the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment passes.
All right, thank you. Mr. Chairman and members, current law requires that the U of M and Minsky develop course equivalency guides for use between educational institutions. What this bill does is require the course equivalency and awarding of credits for formal military courses and occupational training. And so, in short, that's basically what the bill does. I know that there are several testifiers here who would like to speak to the bill, so, Mr. Chairman, if it's okay with you, we can go to testifiers.
Yes, please proceed. Identify yourself again. And
Mr. Chair, members, Mike Puglisi, Deputy Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm just here this morning to lend the department support for this bill. I do want to point out that both Minsky and the University of Minnesota have been tremendous partners with the department and also with the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program. They have implemented many policies to make it a little bit easier and convenient for veterans and their family members to achieve higher learning. And I think this is another way that we can make it a little bit easier for them. We do hear anecdotally from students that get a little frustrated with the amount of credits that they're provided for their military experience, and it seems that it's not always applied consistently depending on where they're going to school. So I think we'd just like the university to take a look and see if there was some way they can come up with some standards to give the appropriate credit to those veterans that really achieved some good training and experience while in the military.
Thank you. And you have other testifiers as well, Representative?
Yes, I know there's folks here from the university. I'm not sure about Minsky, but you may want to ask others too if they were here to testify.
As you come forward, would you each please identify yourself and for the committee? Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Mary Hopkins,
and I'm Director of Student Services at the University of Minnesota.
Thank you.
My name is Michael Lovitz. I'm a Veteran Certification Coordinator at the University of Minnesota and our one-stop student service office.
Thank you.
As Director of Student Services, I have oversight for the certification of educational benefits for our student veterans. We have 633 veterans on our five campuses for spring term. And I want to say that the University of Minnesota is a very veteran-friendly campus. We're known nationwide as a best practices model for offering services for our student veterans. I'd like to highlight a few of our student veteran initiatives that we've completed over the past 3 years. And the first one is that I served on Governor Pawlenty's Yellow Ribbon Task Force, particularly in the higher education work group. Also, we automatically assess resident tuition for undergraduate and graduate student veterans receiving educational benefits. And we've been doing this since fall 2006. We also implemented an application fee waiver for active duty service members deployed overseas. We've been doing that since 2007 because it's difficult for our service members to transmit money back home. We also waive late fees for student veterans as they wait for their educational benefits to be received because sometimes that can take 6 to 8 weeks. We also assembled a campus-wide Veterans Advisory Committee of representatives from across the campus to really look at critical issues that veterans were facing in order to for them to be academically successful and have personal satisfaction. We also have surveyed our student veterans for the past 3 years, asking them about the service we're providing and asking for feedback and what we could do differently and what services we could increase. And also we provided space and staff support to the Metropolitan Regional Coordinator from the Department of Veterans Affairs. And we've established a one-stop veterans office for our student veterans that includes the Metropolitan Regional Coordinator from Veterans Affairs plus staff from my office. And this was a suggestion that came out of the survey to our student veterans. They wanted their own office that they could go to do everything from registration to financial aid to talk about their bill and their VA benefits. We also developed the Veterans Orientation Program to provide introductory information for student veterans about their benefits in the university process. And again, this was another suggestion that came out of our survey. We also sponsored a Campus Recognition Appreciation Day event for student veterans in 2007 and again in 2008. Again, another suggestion that our veterans felt underappreciated, and we wanted to do something about that. And so we had appreciation t-shirts and buttons and food for all on campus. And we had the marching band and an F-16 flyover. We invited Governor Pawlenty, and he was going to come, but at the last minute was unable to come because of a funeral. We also had the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs, Clark Dyrud, attended. So it was a very good event the past 2 years. We have an incredibly robust website for our student veterans, for them to obtain all the information they need on their benefits, programs, resources, and application procedures. We publish and distribute a Veterans Connection newsletter several times each term. We've been doing this since 2006. Again, to keep them up with current information. We've developed a relationship with the Student Veteran Association on campus, again, to keep that dialogue going on what we can continue to improve upon at the university. We've created a Veterans Reintegration Training Program at the university for faculty and staff. We started this in 2006, and the training program describes the challenges soldiers are facing, how reintegration impacts the whole family, how faculty and staff can assist during the transition, and the do's and don'ts when working with combat veterans. We also provide audio conferences and webinars for higher education institutions to help them in developing student veteran initiatives on their campus. And that's the first audio conference we had over 200 institutions from across the country. And I would say that we received 3 to 5 requests a week from institutions across the country asking us how we're doing certain things. How did we develop our website? How did we create and where did we get the funds for the Appreciation Day event and so forth? Also, the application of any freshman applicant or transfer applicant who is not routinely admitted is automatically sent to our internal admissions review committee for an additional individual review. And in closing, I'll add one other item, which is the university was recently recognized for its support of student veterans with a $100,000 Walmart Foundation grant. The grant will be used in 2009 in support of student veterans at the university. We didn't apply for this grant. It was research that was done by the Walmart Foundation, and they recognized the initiatives that we've implemented over the past few years.
Thank you, Johnson. Mr. Ovis, is it?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Lovis.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, members, there's another piece to this puzzle as well, other than just how we care for veterans and how we appreciate them in the university. We've got the financial aid aspect of it and the GI Bill aspect of it. There are term credit limits to financial aid pieces. When you look at transferring credits over, different schools across the country recognize credits differently. And if you bring in military transfer credits, it could count against them as their maximum term credit load. So you're going to have students who may reach the federal mandate maximum for these credit loads and still have a semester or two or three that they have to pay for when they've maxed out on their Pell Grant or their federal loans or something to that effect, because they've had 120 credits, the maximum allowed, but 40 of which or 20 of which might be transfer credits from their military experience. If you were to look at my ACE transcript going off of ACE guidelines, I would be awarded marksmanship credits and physical education credits and other credits to that effect, where in a political science degree, that doesn't apply. So I would have used up eligibility for my financial aid piece for something that doesn't apply to my degree. And you have other experiences that may not cross over. Training that occurs in the military sometimes does transfer over into education in the university setting, but not always. And those are classes that are reviewed by the university under their standards of the admissions office. And they have their information in their course equivalency guide. It's posted online for students to review, and any questions are submitted to the admissions office for further review upon that. But it would be an instance where you take certain courses that may be accepted at a technical college and try to apply it to the University of Minnesota, and it's apples and oranges, and you're trying to give them credit for something that does not get taught at the University of Minnesota, and then we send them out with a degree stamped by the Board of Regents, and they haven't taken the classes in certain areas just because we're trying to recognize that. At the same time, if they use up the maximum credits for their financial aid or their GI Bill when they get a letter saying, hey, you've reached your maximum time frame, we're cutting off your benefits. You have to appeal now to try to get that. And a student is trying to pay for school when they've already reached that 120 credits their junior year of college. So there's other issues than just being able to recognize the service of veterans. All of our office does that. The whole state has been doing that, but there are other issues than just how do we support veterans with a couple of different credits here.
Good, thank you. Yes, Representative Detmer, I understand you have a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and testifiers. Are there any other states that are doing this program of opening up their state to in-state tuition for veterans?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dittmeyer, there are a number of states that are doing that as well, but we're one of the leaders that are doing that.
And Mr. Chairman, just to follow up here.
Yes.
How many veterans do we have now that are currently in the University of Minnesota system or Minsky system that are, and this is a great opportunity. You know, we're bringing into the state the Montgomery GI Bill benefits and into the state of Minnesota, so fiscally this is a sound thing for our state. How many students do you project for are currently in our system?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dittmeyer, there are 633 at the University of Minnesota on the five campuses. I'm not sure what the numbers are for Minshew. We have seen kind of a drop in our number of veterans this past year, and we are anticipating that they are kind of withholding, using their benefits, waiting for the post 9/11 GI Bill to go forward in 2009.
Okay.
Thank you. Any follow up? Does anyone else have a question?
Mr. Chair, one more question.
Yes.
Is there any fiscal note on this? I see money coming into the state, so is there any fiscal note that we're dealing with?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dittmeyer, I'm not sure. The fiscal question has to do with the transfer credit. Is that what you're asking, or about the
General bill? Just generally, is there any fiscal notes that we need to be dealing with?
Not on the granting of credit issue. Okay. There is with the post 9/11 GI Bill and the Yellow Ribbon Program. Most of our undergraduate students will probably be covered under the post 9/11 GI Bill, but the grad and professional students, it's going to be more difficult. And for those students, the Veterans Administration would pay half or $1 for every dollar that the institution pays. And that, and we have 35 graduate and professional students. So that is going to have a financial impact on our institution. But we are going to move forward and participate in the Yellow Ribbon Program.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone else have a question? Yes, Mr. Higgins.
I guess we're basically looking here now, as I understand it, with the amended bill, Representative Coonan, is that we're basically looking at the credits that a military personnel would possibly be qualified for as a result of their training. Now is there a system nationwide that dictates this sort of thing, or is it left up to the U and to MNSCQ could you explain a little bit more of that to me? How you determine? I know that certainly our military is much more sophisticated and trained and nowadays than when the old days when I was in. But I understood from your testimony also the concern about the eligibility and running out of that and all this sort of thing. But I guess my question, Mr. Chairman, is that how do you determine which courses qualify and which don't for a credit? I mean, is there a system that is in place, or do you have leeway to do it yourself?
Mr. Chair and Representative Magnus, at the university, we have a policy that was approved by our Senate in 1997. And basically, in general, we grant courses, our credit, for courses that we teach. And so there is a process, if it's a student can submit a request to our admissions office, it goes through a review. But we do need test scores. We need any kind of documentation that they have, because we really need to look at the scope of what their military experience was in relation to the courses that we teach at the university. Now, at MNSCQ, they subscribe to the ACE, the American Council on Education Guidelines. And there are schools throughout the country, some that do subscribe to those standards, where it's kind of set in terms of the courses that you might accept. But the university at this point does not subscribe to those. And I should qualify this, that I am not from the admissions office, so I'm not an expert in this area, but I will try to answer questions as best I can.
Thank you. And well, Representative Magnus, I know from some experience in the military that certain universities that work with the military, like the University of Maryland has an overseas division, University of California does the same, and they're much more flexible on awarding credits. And certain schools that we have in the military, like the language school at Presidio, California, they have intensive language classes. They will, almost every school in the United States would award credit for that. So I think it varies from school to school.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Members of the committee, Representative Magnus, with that, the Defense Language Institute would be accepted because it is an intense language course for your liberal ed requirements, for the liberal ed requirements for the language. When you want to submit your courses for review, like you were talking about, Representative Magnus, is you would print off what everything the Army says is called an ARTS transcript. It's your ACE recommendation, and they would submit that to the school along with any documentation of courses they may have completed, that they received from the school certificates, etc. The admissions office, under their process, would review the recommendations from ACE and what the transcript outlines as far as their course criteria. As I hinted at earlier, if you were to look at mine, it would be awarding me credits if I were to try this for marksmanship, physical training, and things to that effect. At a technical school, perhaps something might transfer over to a university like Minnesota. It may not have as much influence there because it doesn't go towards what university teaches. There's no equivalency to marksmanship. We don't offer an aviation course, things to that effect. So there's some classes like the Defense Language Institute that would transfer over that are great training experiences, would definitely meet up with course standards at the university, and there's some that just don't transfer over. So to take that and submit it, some of them are written very generally. So a student could submit further information, maybe a course outline, or, hey, this is the material that we covered. Take a look at this, please, someone in the admissions office, and see if what I did here meets up a little bit more. They would review the documentation versus the procedure they have and then make a determination. But there is a documentation you put out there with the ACE recommendations. The problem is, against the apples and oranges, what goes for a technical school versus what goes for a liberal arts college, and what will actually count towards that degree. Experience is a great thing to have and does count towards your life experience and your career that you have as a result of that. But what will actually count towards that degree is worthwhile.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Are there any other questions from the committee members? Anyone in the audience? Oh, yeah. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment. I know today, I know in the Army, they both your soldiers, all their records, everything all electronically kept, and they have access to their evaluations and their records, and they can print it off and actually give a title of what the training was or what the course was. So everything is done electronically now, all their records, so it's pretty easy for a soldier now to verify what he's gone through because it's all verified electronically. So.
Thank you. Any other questions? I see someone else moving forward to testify here. Yes, please come forward and identify yourself.
Hello, my name is Dwayne Bauer. I'm with Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Higher Education Veterans Program. I'm stepping forward because I noticed that we do not have a Minsky representative here. Currently, Minsky is actually trying to develop a plan where they're going to look at the ACE recommendations for military education and see how they can transfer it into their system. Once that is in place, Minsky has actually said that they're going to open it up so any of the universities across the nation can actually access it to compare their programs and benefits versus what the military says is available. Now, I just felt this was important for this committee to know this and to understand that it is in place and they're looking at trying to get it nationwide.
Good. Thank you, Ms. Bell. Is there anyone else who would like to testify? Colonel Allman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Colonel Eric Allman, Director of Government Relations for Department of Military Affairs. I just wanted to talk to a point to the rigor of military courses, and it was also referred to a little bit here by Representative Magnus, is that all the military courses are evaluated by educational professionals, as was mentioned too with the ACE guide, so forth, the recommendations are made. And as much as possible, the military is using the civilian standards and so forth to ensure that all the courses are of a high quality nature and that instructors are qualified to instruct it. In fact, all instructors have to go through special instructor training to teach all those classes. So therefore, I think you're seeing a high level of technical and competence on all these courses, and as such, those credit recommendations are valid and appropriate. So of course, from that perspective, the Department of Military Affairs supports this provision. Also, we'd be remiss if we didn't take the opportunity to express our appreciation to the higher educational partners who have been so forthcoming in working with us and returning veterans to help make their return to the educational environment successful.
Thank you, Colonel Allen. Does anyone else like to testify? If not, Representative Junin, do you want to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'll renew my motion that House File 1281 be recommended to pass as amended and referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs.
Good, thank you. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Good. Motion prevails. Thank you. And I don't know, members, if you want to indulge me, but I have a bill. I have no one to testify. It's very short. Or I can lay it over, whatever you prefer to do. 3 minutes? I think I can do it in 3 minutes.
Okay. Welcome to your committee, Representative Newton. Would like to move your bill.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I'd like to move House File 1356, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Newton moves House File 1356 that be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. Go ahead,
Mr. Chair, thank you. This bill is very simple. What it does is it permits disabled veterans and active duty service members in uniform to use public transportation free of charge. It's almost on a space available basis. Many of you who have been out to the VA know of the problem with parking out there and trying to get into the VA. A lot of that is because we have VFWs and Legions that are bringing people out to the VA for care and treatment. This would permit them to take a bus, get on the Hiawatha line, go to the hospital, get around the community. And so it's, as I say, it's pretty straightforward, and I have nothing to add.
Okay. Questions, Representative Fowler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question. It doesn't expand the requirements of public transportation. I mean, all it says is that if the public transportation exists, they may write it free, correct?
That's correct, Representative Fowler.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Anything further? Representative Magnus.
Mr. Chairman, where's this bill heading? Is it going to Representative Tremba's committee, or is it going to transportation, or
Representative Magnus, we're a division of the ag, so it'll go there. From there, we can talk to Representative Leader or Representative Hornstein if they want to see it. It would sure be appropriate, I think, that it go there.
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that because there are some programs that for transit that and I think and that committee certainly knows about them because I serve on the committee and there's some programs there and it might see how this fits in with all of that. So I would suggest you, Representative Newton, that you do look at transportation. Representative Leader's not here right now, but anyway, he knows about it.
Yeah, okay. So. Thank you, Representative Magnus. Representative Dabber.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Newton, how will a soldier or a veteran, when he gets on the bus, how will he show, will he have some type of ID to identify and divide?
You know, Representative Dettmer, I haven't thought this part through completely because I don't know if our disabled veterans actually have an ID card that shows that they are a disabled veteran. Those of us who use the VA, of course, have our VA card, but that doesn't show on the card itself whether they are disabled or not. So that's something I haven't checked into. I don't know if you know, Representative Magnus.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sure the Transportation Committee will definitely address that issue.
Yeah. Mr. Cleary, do you have something to add to that?
Mr. Chairman, there might be veterans who know this better than myself, but it's my understanding that a disabled veteran at any level can get a VA ID card and could show that on the bus.
Okay. Anybody from the audience who cares to testify for or against the bill? No? Okay. If there's no further questions, closing comments, Representative Newton?
No, Mr. Chair, I'd simply like to renew my motion to move House File 1356.
Okay, Representative Newton renews his motion that House File 1356 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. And members, thank you for staying with us. And we're adjourned.